Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared podcast. This is your host, Aaliyah, and I'm here with my co-host, Curtis. And today, we are chatting with the marvelous Pedro of A&P Reacts, who does a reaction channel and also does videos for Out of Line Music, commentary on the music scene and relevant topics. So first, to start things off, thank you, Pedro, for coming on the podcast again.
It's always a pleasure. I'm hoping that after my sixth time on this podcast, I become a co-host. That's my goal for 2023.
I'm down.
I think you're pretty much there. Curtis, do you want to start things off?
Of course. So let's go back to, I think it was about a month ago. Pedro, you made a very inflammatory post. Well, not an inflammatory post. I'm joking here. You broke a story. Let's put it that way. Can you kind of say what happened and kind of set us up here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I spoke about it because honestly, I don't fear any consequences that could come from it because not making money on YouTube and not monetizing the work that I do gives me the freedom of calling people out when I feel like they need to be called out because there's no consequences to my bottom line because there's no bottom line. So what happened was I interviewed Angel Ripper of Sodom. And part of that interview, I asked him about a chance of a big four of thrash metal, German thrash metal, which is, for those that don't know, Sodom, Tankard, Destruction, and Creator to do a tour. Not necessarily a North American tour, but just do a tour, like big four of German thrash. And he went to mention that, you know, he would be down. He knows Destruction would be down. Tankard would be down. But he doesn't feel like Creator would be on board with that because perhaps they're a little bit bigger than everybody else, and perhaps they see themselves as a little bit bigger than everybody else. But not that he threw Creator under the bus, but he definitely put the onuses on Creator for the reason why that tour hasn't happened. So a couple of days later, maybe a day later, or maybe even the same day that I posted the interview, Blabbermouth had a piece on their website, which they quoted my interview, and they had a link to the video interview, and everything is fine. It's not the first time that they've done that. I'm totally cool with that. I don't have any issues with that whatsoever. But then about 2 weeks later, Metal Injection I saw a tweet from Metal Injection mentioning that kind of story. And when I clicked on it, to my surprise, they said that they took the story from Blabbermouth. And I was like, wow, that doesn't seem right because I was the one that asked that question. And keep in mind, he was doing promo for 40 years of Sodom that was released, an album celebrating 40 years of the history of Sodom that was released on Steam Hammer. And nobody asked that question until I asked that question. So I think that's important because I'm not saying I have ownership of questions, which nobody does. But what I'm saying is that nobody asked that question until I asked that question. So I think that is important to outline. So when I ask Metal Injection, what the hell, you guys are giving props to Blabbermouth. It's like, you know, two hookers high-fiving each other after John giving them tip. I felt like, what's going on here? So then they said to me, well, we're not quoting you. We're quoting Blabbermouth because they did their own interview and they asked that question. So I was like, what's happening here? So I went and I checked. And I talked to the label, and it's true. Blabbermouth did have an interview 2 weeks later after my interview. And whoever was doing the interview from Blabbermouth pretty much asked the same question and the same line of questioning that I had asked 2 weeks prior. Now, this is not a case of plagiarism because they didn't copy my story and call it their own, but they took my interview and the questions that I asked and ask exactly the same questions. Once again, I don't own the questions, but I think if you are, or you consider yourself, which I don't, a journalist, you don't ask questions of a person who already answered those same questions 2 weeks before that you posted on your own website. It would be like CNN posting a story of a journalist, and then 2 weeks later, You know, Anderson Cooper is asking the same questions to the same person that they already broke 2 weeks before. It doesn't make real sense to me. If you consider yourself a journalist, what you do is you set up an interview with that person and you piggyback off of what I ask and you dive deeper to see what's there. What kind of dirt can we discover? Like, how much deeper can we go on this? And if you consider yourself an even better journalist, you contact Creator and you ask them, what's their take on this? Because basically, Angel Ripper threw Creator under the bus. So if you really want to push the envelope and get to the bottom of this investigation, you ask Creator, right? They didn't neither. What they did was laziness, pure laziness. It would be like me interviewing somebody and I don't know what to ask that person. So I go find the latest interview that they did that got some clicks. And I ask the same questions as that person did. Once again, it's not plagiarism, but it's borderline. At the very least is laziness. Laziness, at the very least. Now, when I brought this up, Metal Injection was like, well, I would just copy what they said, which, fair enough, that is true. They are quoting the right source, but the right source is what the issue is here. And if they consider themselves journalists, there should be some integrity to it, and they should understand exactly what's happening. Now, Blabbermouth basically confirmed my point, which is they tweeted back at me saying, oh, no, one of our guys just asked the same questions as you did. That's why the answers were similar. Okay, so you're confirming what I'm saying, which is lazy journalism or pseudo-journalism. This comes down to one very simple fact. These websites, both of them, make a shit ton. Oh, I don't know if I can curse, sorry. They make a ton. I can? You can?
Yeah, go ahead.
So they make a shit ton of money, both of them. I don't make any money, and I'm not looking at making any money. That's the issue here is not the money. The issue is that they make a lot of money, and therefore we should hold them to a higher standard than people like myself, who is just doing this as a hobby. Because they call themselves journalists. They have people on staff that are paid to do what they're doing. And what they're doing is they're taking away ideas and storylines from other people, in my case, in this case, and making them then their own to generate more money for themselves.
Yeah.
When the person who originally created the content or broke the story is getting nothing. And once again, I don't want anything, but I'm just saying that you should hold them to a much higher standard than the blogger, than the YouTuber, than whatever, because they call themselves journalists. They are paid to do what they do. The bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is that these websites have no integrity. Both of them have no integrity whatsoever. This is not the first time that they do stuff like this. It won't be the last. They're famously known for quoting stories from people and giving no credit to the people who actually broke the stories to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is the first time. It's just that people within the business don't call them out because of the size and the reach that they have. And people don't do it because they're afraid of the backlash that comes from it. Guess what? I don't care if they never quote one of my stories ever again. I don't give a crap because, once again, I don't make money off of it. So I have no, they don't generate any revenue for me with the traffic that they send my way. None. So I don't care. I care about the integrity of the music world that I belong to. And I feel like we need to hold these people accountable. We need to hold their feet to the fire because this is disgraceful. What they're doing is outlandish. And once again, they get away with it because of their size, because of their reach, because of what they do. And they're famously known, both of them, for clickbait kind of articles, kind of titles, all of this kind of stuff. And once again, people live with it because they benefit from it, or at least they hope to benefit from it. And I don't think, when I see bands out there calling them out on Twitter, calling them out on Instagram for clickbait titles, for taking stories out of context, and then when they release an album sharing that album review or then use from those same sites, it's a bunch of hypocrisy. And I don't mean the band throughout, from the behemoths of the world to the Mike Portnoy's of the world. I see them complaining all the time. But then when there's something good on those sites that meets their agenda or feeds their machine, they're the first ones to share. I have to call that shit out. I don't care who these people are. I don't care who their mothers are. This kind of shit is ridiculous. It's unreal. And it needs to stop, even though I know it won't. But I felt like I had to say something. And when you look at my feed, when you look at the people replying to me and people who've gone through this or who had this happen to them, you see that this is not an isolated incident.
I agree. Now, I got 2 points here that I just want to bring up is number one, I agree with the hypocrisy because I've seen bands do that. They hate metal sucks. They hate metal injection or whatever. And then they're the first people to ask me to get them placed at those exact same places after they've been bitching about them for the last 2 years. And I'm always like, you don't make any fucking sense. You don't make any sense. Number two, one thing I've noticed is I think I both agree and disagree with you on one point. I think it's about 50% of the time that they quote the original source. It depends. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's all the time, but I would say it's probably about 50-50. What are your thoughts on that?
For me personally,
yeah.
I've every story that Blabbermouth has had that the source came from me, they've always given me a link to my video. I got to call a spade from that perspective. I never had an issue. Now, privately, I had people reaching out to me more so about metal injection, not about Blabbermouth. People reached out to me about metal injection, quoting their stories and not giving them not even a link or mentioning them in the article whatsoever. So, and I'm talking about other big publications, not in North America, but like European publications, the like vloggers and people who have websites and that kind of stuff have reached out privately to me and said, oh, you know, maybe you need to reach out to this person because every time they post one of my stories, I have to reach out. You shouldn't have to reach out to them every time they post a story. It's ridiculous.
I agree with you on that. Now, here's the thing that I don't understand, and just back up because I understand what you're saying. So you were the first person to ask the question of Sodom, correct? You found that out, or what? Or did I misunderstand? And it was Blabbermouth asked it first, but you didn't find that out till later.
Asked the question first.
That's what I thought.
They quoted my story on their website, and they made a story out of it. And then 2 weeks later, they had one of their own guys pretty much asking the same questions that I asked, and then making a second story out of it, which was pretty much a copy of the first story because the versions were the same.
Just making sure, because the way you had said it, I was just making sure it was like an error where the two of you guys had much the same. Okay, just clarifying before my next question here. Did you say anything to the writer who wrote that article on Blabbermouth, or no?
No.
Okay, cool. You just made your displeasure felt with Blabbermouth.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Aliyah, I want to go off slightly on this topic, but is there anything you want to follow up on before I do? Not off, but I want to go off on something on here.
Not really anything of huge value. It does make me think a little bit, not that interview questions are the same as artwork or anything like that, but it reminds me of how like these big mass market clothing companies will take the artist or art style of small designers, maybe change it tiny bit, and sell product on their website, like graphic t-shirts with this artwork, and never give credit to the original artist, never pay them or anything like that. And technically it's legal, but it's unethical.
And to add to what you're saying, if they had done this, but they were a website that does not make any money, for example, if I took a picture that you took and I use your picture as a thumbnail, it's different because I'm not monetizing that video. So I'm not generating any revenue for me with your work, right?
But agreed.
These guys, they're generating revenue from other, if you think about it, Blabbermouth, 90% of Blabbermouth is other people's work that they just put it out there.
Other people's work
except for the reviews. Exactly. That's why I said 90%, but I'm probably being generous. It's probably 95%. And they're making a boatload of money. I mean, I don't know if you guys are aware, but it's not like they charge for some of those reviews, for a lot of those reviews. They charge for bands that want to put a story about an upcoming North American tour. They charge for those things. Those things to be on their website cost money because of the clicks that it generates. So these guys are making hand over fist with other people's work. I mean, this is the greatest scam of all time. Starting a website where I gather other people's work, rewarded, give them a link, and then generate money from them. I have to clap because I wish I had come up with that idea like 20 years ago. I would be freaking rich. I wouldn't be sitting here right now. Not that I hate being here right now.
Pedro's going to get his blacklisted. I can feel it. Now, moving off that part of the topic, So let's get on to one other thing here. So Pedro, so let's say if you had seen something kind of like what Blabbermouth did, where you were kind of where you felt there was some big news and you wanted to follow up the question on it yourself in an interview, how would you have done it without copying or giving credit to the original source?
I would have done it this way. I would have said, sure. Let's say I'm interviewing Angel Ripper, and let's say the roles are reversed, right? Yeah. I would say I saw the story. The interview that you did with such and such person at such and such website, I thought that was really interesting. Would you mind elaborating on what you said about Creator? Are you saying that they think too highly of themselves and that's why they don't want to go on the tour? That's how I would have started that conversation. I would have started that conversation by acknowledging the person who asked the first question, the website where that story came from, acknowledging that, and then building up upon it. Not asking the same thing that the other dude already asked. I mean, there's no value in it.
I agree. So it'd be something like, I saw you on Pedro. I saw you in Curtis and Aaliyah's podcast, and you were talking about how people rip other people off, blah, blah, blah type of a thing. Right?
Yeah. Cool. Exactly. I think that's the right way of doing it.
I agree. So, okay. So now kind of where else do you kind of, or sorry. What else do you kind of feel is kind of rampant with people doing similar stuff like this? Because, I mean, obviously, this isn't the first time that's happened to you. So can you give you a few other examples as well? Maybe not naming names.
Well, no, I mean, I think the music business in general is rotten to the core, to be honest with you guys. And it's from the top all the way to the bottom. The inconsistencies, like I said, the hypocrisy that exists, it's very hard to start to take some of the deeper I go into the music business, specifically metal related, in the 5 years that I've been having a YouTube channel, the more displeasure I have with everything. And the more I realize that everything is business and everything is money driven and everything is like that. And I'm glad that I'm part of it, but I'm part of it in a bubble, because it does give me the freedom to just say whatever I want, because I don't owe anybody anything. But it's ridiculous. I mean, one of the things that's been talked about a lot now has nothing to do with this, but it has to do with the business. The merch cut at shows. It's a big thing now. I mean, this has been happening forever. I don't know why bands now suddenly, it's a big issue now, because now it has a bigger impact on their bottom line than it did 2 years ago, 3 years ago before the pandemic. But that issue has been there forever, since I remember going to shows. Yeah. So, and then I see people saying from one band to another, oh, thanks for saying something. You know, more people need to say something. Guess what? You're a band. You have a platform. Why don't you say something? Like, I mean, and then saying something only means this much. You want to take a real stand? Don't tour in venues that charge you a percentage. Like, you really want to take a stand? Take that stand. If you are the Bad Omens of the world, if you are the Motionless in Whites of the world, you have enough power within you to say, hey, we want to do a tour, but these are our conditions to do that tour. Sure, they're not going to do that. They'd rather bitch about what they're paying for the merch, because they know that there would be no tour. There would be no tour at the end of the day. So this is where I find the hypocrisy in it all. It's good and dandy that we're talking about it, and I appreciate the fact that we're talking about it. But at the end of the day, who's paying for it? The fans, who are paying $50, $55 a t-shirt. And if you're a fat guy like me, you pay the fat tax, it's going to cost you $60. So, which I don't understand how the XL t-shirt is $5 cheaper than the double XL. I understand there's more fabric, but by that train of thought, the medium and small should be $10 cheaper because there's less fabric on those. So, and come on, I know how it works with the merch. You know, it doesn't work like that. You buy it on bulk. Give me a break. Everybody's scamming everybody. The venues are scamming the bands. The bands are scamming the fans. I mean, this is like, it's ridiculous.
One thing I want to point out about that is like, even from the blank's perspective, just coming from, I work at a warehouse or a distributor of blank apparel. So I know that on that level, the 2XL, 3XL, 4, 5, 6XL, they all cost more, like $2 or $3 more for the blanks. But why don't you just average that difference out on the cost of all of the shirts? That and seems to be the logical thing.
The medium smalls and extra smalls cheaper? Have you thought about the fact that North America has a huge fat population? And most metalheads are buying double XLs and triple XLs. So that's where the money is?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just putting it out there. This is a fact of life. If the metalheads attending the shows were mediums and smalls and extra smalls, they would charge you more for those because they would say it's harder to get those sizes because, hey, those are smaller sizes. They're not as regular. There's always an excuse to make more money. So I'm saying, for as much as the bands are getting ripped off by the venues, the fans are getting ripped off by the bands. It's a vicious cycle. They just transfer their costs onto the fans. You know, it's the way the cookie crumbles, unfortunately.
Everybody sucks. That's the bottom line on that.
But listen, I don't have a problem with everybody trying to make a buck. What I have a problem is people sitting on their soapboxes claiming moral high ground when they have no high ground whatsoever. You're part of the machine that feeds this whole thing. And if you don't like the machine that you're in, then do something about it. Put your money where your mouth is. The problem is they won't. It's like when people get upset and they say, let's do a protest. The protest means a hashtag because it's comfortable. You're at home, you send a couple of hashtags and that's done. That's the generation that we're currently living in.
Well, I think also the people that are complaining know, like you said, but it's like they don't care. They actually don't care. They just want a piece of the action. So that's my own opinion.
Yeah, I saw Dark Funeral posting today that during this North American tour that they did with Cannibal Corpse, there were some nights where they paid more in the percentage of merchandise to the venue than they got on their guarantee for the show.
That's insane.
But if that's happening, you mark down which venue that happened at or what venues are doing that or who they're charging you, and don't play in those venues. Guess what? If bands blackballed venues, the venues would change their modus operandi. Because the venues need the bands in order to survive. It's a vicious cycle. The bands need the venues, but the venues also need the bands. So if large bands that bring full houses, that are headliners, took a stand and said, we're not playing shows at venues that charge 20%. 10%, okay, we accept 10%. We're not playing at venues that charge 20%, unless you give us 20% of the bar. If they took that stand, the venues would have to reconfigure their way of doing things because there would be no shows at their venues.
Yep. And don't even get me started on buy-ons because that's a whole other topic that we could go into for a while, but we're not going to talk about that tonight.
We're not talking about buy-ons tonight.
We're not talking about buy-ons tonight. So we should probably pivot to the next part of the podcast since we're about a half an hour in. Aaliyah, do we want to go into year ends or what do we want to talk about?
Sure. It's like kind of awkward to shift the topic, but.
Well, I'm trying to because I don't want to miss it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Pedro, what do you want to say about year end lists?
This year, for the first time on the channel, we're going to have my five disappointments of the year. I don't want to call them flops. I don't want to call them duds. I don't want to call them bricks. I'm calling them disappointments because at the end of the day, I had really high expectations for these albums and they just didn't deliver. Now, I'm not going to go through my list because I want people to watch my video.
I wanted an exclusive. I wanted the premiere of Pedro.
But I'll give you guys one that I feel like above all others is a huge disappointment, at least for me. And that is Amon Amarth. The Great Heathen Army, in my opinion, is one of the biggest disappointments of 2022. The album just doesn't cut it.
What were you expecting? All their albums sound the same, dude.
But no. This one doesn't.
They do.
And this one doesn't. And that's why it sucks. So
Fair. Okay, fair.
Because when you buy Amon Amarth, you come with certain expectations. You can say they all sound the same, but I can make the same argument for AC/DC.
They do.
Many other bands out there.
I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying it's very similar.
I just find that this album lacks character. It lacks direction. It doesn't have a sense of purpose to it. It comes across as a compilation more than a full-length album. Songs that were created individually within a bubble and then thrown together as a record. And when you start to do that, and then at the same time you change a little bit of what your traditional sound is, which is that chugging that Amon Amarth always had in their music, you start to lose a little bit of the identity of who you are as a band. And I think I'm going to, you know, people can argue about all they want. Ah, you're wrong. This is a great album, blah, 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 blah. We all know how the simps are. But we'll see. The next North American tour under a new record, how many songs of this album will still be on the set list? That is always a sign of how good or how bad an album is. And I'll tell you right now, I don't think you're going to see a lot of the songs from the Great Heathen Army, maybe the exception being the title track. the Great Heathen Army. Outside of that, I don't see them keeping a lot of songs on the set list because they're just not strong enough to be around Pursuit of Vikings, Twilight of the Thunder God, Raise Your Horns, and the list goes on and on.
Other than Put Your Back Into the Oar, I would agree with you on that one. I mean, it's pretty...
Back Into the Oar was not in the album.
Wasn't it?
No, it was not on the album. It was just a single that was released on his own.
Well, fuck then. I forgot.
Back in the Oar is a great track. That one probably will be...
I was sure that was on this album. I just listened to that today. Fuck.
Nope.
Fair.
Band's doing the singles thing now. It's confusing everybody.
It is confusing. Like, fuck. I listened to it today, too, and I thought it was on
the album. No, that song is not on the album.
Fair enough. Okay, so Amon Amarth. So you don't want to go into your other one. So now I have a question here. So why did you decide to do flops? Like, that seems kind of mean.
Because I felt really disappointed with these records, you know.
Fair.
Normally I keep to myself, and I hate creating negative content, and I feel like this is creating negative content, and I hate it, and I've never done it before. This is the first time I'm doing it, but I also get accused constantly of being a homer and always doing great reviews, always propping up the bands and telling everybody how good this album is and how good that album is. And people say, dude, you never do a review that you don't like an album or this or that. I do. You just don't watch those reviews because you only watch the reviews of the bands that you like.
I've experienced one of those.
Yes, you have. So, and you'll continue to experience if you send bands like that my way. So I felt like I almost needed to do this video just to prove to people that I can say something bad about somebody. You know what I mean? Because, I'm always accused of not doing it. And I feel like I do it. It's just that sometimes people are so hang up on numbers. So when they look at a review, they want to know, okay, out of five, how much do you rate? Out of five, how much do you rate? Well, this and that. And I don't do that. So, but if you pay attention to what I'm saying when I'm reviewing an album, you can tell if the review is negative or positive based on what I'm saying. You don't need to have a number at the end to tell you if the review was positive or negative. You know what I mean? So, but I just don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think a lot of people are intelligent enough to understand what's being told to them because they've been fed a system and they're trying to just see that system, which is numbers at the end of the review and almost skipping the review or not even registering the review, not digesting what's being told to you. You're just waiting for that number to say that they agree or they disagree with what your opinion is, which at that point is not really an opinion. It's just you're stating your fact. So I felt like this video was needed from that point of view more so than not. And then I was really upset about some of the releases. And I feel like some bands this year were very lazy with their releases because it felt to me that this was a result of the pandemic. We're not touring. There's no shows. There's nothing to do. What are we going to do? Let's release an album because now the tours are starting again. We need some new content in order to go on the road. Okay, but we don't have any really new content. Okay, what tracks do we have from the last album that didn't make the cut that we can kind of now make a new album with all of these B-side songs that were not good enough for the previous record, but somehow are going to be good enough for the new record? Because people are going to be so excited about the record and the tour, they're not even going to care about it. Some bands kind of took that approach. I must say, at least I'm not saying that's the approach that they took, but that's the impression that they've left me with after listening to the albums, because I'm sitting here listening to the Sabatons of the World, and I'm like, what's happening here? Who in their right mind thought that this was a good record to release? Like, does anybody out there have any filter? Are we surrounding ourselves just with yes people that just agree with everything? I know the labels just want to release another record because obviously people are going to buy it anyways, and the band wants to have the record so they can go on tour. I get all of that, but you know, it's an insult to my intelligence when some bands put out some records out there like the ones I saw this year. There's more than five, you know, incredible disappointments this year, but I wanted to narrow it down to five, and that video will be out soon.
Now I have to ask a question about that. Are the five bands that are mentioned on this video, are they bigger bands mostly?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Good.
Because all major label bands, they're all bands that headline big shows, big tours. Good. There's no small band. There's no unsigned band. There's no band from a little label.
Cool. Right. And so in that regard, I think it's not like you're beating the little guys up or something like that. And it's like, it can be cathartic sometimes for people, for the other fans who were also disappointed in those albums, to hear your perspective and to not feel alone in their disappointment.
But I think a lot of people will also jump on me and say, like, oh, this album is great. What are you talking about? Blah, 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 blah.
Sure. I'm sure you'll get plenty of that.
You're not a fan of the band if you don't like this. I don't subscribe to that viewpoint. To me, I still went to a Amon Amarth when they were in Toronto. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'll still continue to go to Amon Amarth shows. So just because I didn't like this record, it doesn't mean I don't like the band. It doesn't mean I don't like what they've done in the past. It doesn't mean I won't like what they'll do in the future. I'm just looking focusedly on what they've done now, and what they've done now, it was subpar. That's all.
And also, you're calling them a disappointment. You're not saying they're bad.
Yeah, I'm not calling it a flop. Because at the end of the day, it's very subjective to the person who's talking about it, right? What's a flop for me may not be a flop for you. And it's not like the albums musically are badly written or badly recorded. We're not talking about 6 feet under here, what sounds like they're recorded with a tape deck under a streetcar running over a bridge where there's two homeless guys playing poker. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about records that have good mixing, good sound, good production, good musicians behind it. The songwriting is good. The lyrical content is good. All of those things were good. It's just the albums themselves are hollow. They don't have soul. That's the problem.
Now, one thing I wanted to point out, just as an aside, I believe, and I would imagine that probably part of the reason why there was so much subpar albums is because of the pandemic, like you said, and bands needing to make money due to losing income from the last 2 years. Again, I agree with you on that. I'm just commenting that that's got to be the main thing.
But by the same token, here's the thing: a lot of bands released amazing albums this year for the same reason, because they had more time.
Exactly. But there's also bands that have released multiple albums or two albums within the last 3 years. It normally would take longer. So that's all.
So it really is a testament to not just the times that you're living in, but your approach. I think
it's a perfect storm, right? It's a mixture of conditions coming together. It all comes down to the preparation. Maybe some of the great albums that came out this year, they were in the works regardless. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe
ours was.
I know a lot of bands that released albums in 2022 that the albums were already recorded in 2020. Mm-hmm. The reason why they weren't released in 2020 was because of the pandemic. So they pushed the album forward 2 years and the album came out now. Yeah. So I don't think there's one reason why it's happening, but it is happening. Yeah. And maybe something that plays into it, because we're talking once again, the top five on my list are all big bands. I mean, if I mention Amon Amarth, obviously they're all going to be at that level. Yeah. So if you're talking about bands at that level, I think some bands are also a little bit of they're a little bit conditioned by the new market that we live in, which is, like you guys were talking before, singles, Spotify listens, that kind of stuff. And I think when you live in this new world, maybe you need to reevaluate what an album really means, right? Like, you need to reevaluate that. Like, does the album really mean the experience that used to mean when you put it on and you listen from the first to the last song? Or are albums now becoming just a compilation of the work that you've done through a period of time, right? Because if you present it on one hand, one idea versus the other, then I'm going to look at them for what they are. But if you're releasing an album and you're telling me that you're releasing an album, I'm going to expect the album to have that start, middle, and end. If you're like a band, and I'm going to give the example of Mice and Men, who released three singles and EPs, and then they put them together at the end of the year, and then they had a full-length record, that is a different story, because that has a different premises to it. So you look at that premise, and you're going to evaluate that record from a different viewpoint than you would a band that releases an album as a full-length album.
I agree. Aaliyah, what do we want to follow up on this? We're already
running out of time. So I know there was one more topic that you wanted to talk about, Pedro, about a local concert.
I just want to give a shout out to Walter. He was a big dude in the local metal scene here in Toronto. That wasn't a show that you would go to that he wouldn't be at. And if he wasn't at the show, probably wouldn't be a good show to begin with. So he was a very good barometer of how good the show was going to be. He passed away a couple of weeks ago, suddenly, unexpectedly. And he was the kind of guy that never had a bad word to say about anybody, never had an ill word about anything. Everything was always good for him. He would show up really early to the venues to take pictures with the bands outside as they were offloading. He always had his little Canon camera with him and taking selfies and stuff like that with friends, with people in the community that would go to shows that knew who he was, that saw him as a staple of what the metal scene is in Toronto. And to lose a guy like that, suddenly like that, unexpectedly, has left a big hole in the community and has left a big hole in all of our hearts. And there's going to be a fundraising show happening at the Rockpile on January 7th. There's going to be 27 bands playing, local bands playing. That just goes to show you the support and the love that the bands have for him and for what he represented. And the show starts at noon, I believe, and it's going to run, I don't know, for how many hours. I mean, just imagine 27 bands. So there's going to be quite a long day. There's going to be some items there available for silent auction. I've been able to reach some of my friends in the music industry and major labels, and I must say that most of them have been super receptive, and they're participating in that silent auction by sending me items that we're going to be able to auction off, merchandise items, vinyls, and stuff like that. So to see these major labels, some of them who don't have any representation in North America, some of them who are in Europe as their headquarters, to see them coming into the forefront and being a part of this for a guy that they didn't know just because of what he meant to the scene here, what he meant to me, and then obviously what I mean to them, speaks volumes. I think it's one of the few things that I can say it's positive within this business, is that when one of us goes down, everybody kind of helps us get up. The same way it happens in the pit, the same way it happens in life. And to see these major labels coming into the forefront and providing this merch, providing these items that we can auction so that we can give Walter not just a proper funeral, because the funeral is happening this week, but the proper send-off and making sure everything is paid for, everything is taken care of, I think is the least that we can do as a community in general and as a community as far as the metal scene in Toronto is concerned.
Just as a clarification, the funds are going to?
The funds are going to his family, to his cousin. His parents passed away, so he doesn't have siblings. He doesn't have any direct family. Yeah. So his cousin is the one taking care of the funeral arrangements and all of that stuff. So all the funding will go towards her, his cousin, so that she can pay for everything and she can ensure that he gets a tombstone and it gets it taken care of, that he gets the send off that he deserves. And once again, I don't want to take credit for anything. I haven't made anything public at all about it, because that's not what it's about. But I just want to really give a shout out to all the major labels that have been so positive in their feedback and have been so positive to immediately jump on board and say, what do you need? What do you need? Awesome. We'll send you whatever it is that you need. So, that's awesome. I'm going to be posting some pictures eventually when we have the concert, because I think some of these labels, for as much as we shit on people sometimes, and I've done my fair share on this show today of shitting on people, I think sometimes it's needed that people who go outside the box and help those in need are at the very least recognized for what they've done. And once again, I'm not talking about me. I'm just a middle guy. I'm just calling friends and asking for favors. But those friends that are pulling those favors and that are doing this stuff, I think they deserve at least a thank you, an acknowledgement. And I plan on doing that on the day of the show.
That's awesome. Leah, what else do we want to cover, if anything, today?
No, I think that's about all we have time for today, Curtis.
Cool.
When is the show happening, Pedro?
January 7th at the Rockpile. For those watching, listening, you guys can go on Facebook. There's a Facebook page for the Rockpile. All the information is there. The ticket information is there. The tickets are fairly cheap. It's not $7,000 for a VIP experience at Metallica. So you can have a great experience at the Rockpile. You can grab my boobs and squeeze my balls if you want. It's only going to be.
Ooh, I'm there. I'm there then. I'm there. You know,
it's free. It's free. It comes with a ticket purchase. So you can buy it. I think it's like $15 or something like that for a ticket. 27 bands are playing. They have food there. So you're going to be able to grab some food, have some drinks, watch some great bands, celebrate Walter's life, celebrate his happiness and what he gave to this community. And hopefully we can give him the send off that he deserves.
Awesome.
Hell yeah, for sure. Well, thank you again for coming on the podcast, and we'll have you back again soon, probably. And everyone listening.
Maybe.
Well, if you agree,
that wasn't very reassuring.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
If you're willing, you know.
Maybe. Okay.
Maybe. And everyone listening, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.